Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Welcome back. It's Mullin Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mark Brody in for Mullin today. That was Rick Hahn. Of course, we take that out of context. SBS for the parade. That's always his thing. Very confident in the past, and I think that he's confident this year. But I think this year, Mark, and as we're going to get to in breakdown, I want to get – there's a podcast on White Sox Talk podcast that is Chuck Garfine does, and he does a terrific job. Chuck is actually Mr. White Sox. We're going to talk to him at 825. Rick Hahn, to me, came across differently because he was less defensive. He was certainly optimistic. And he talked about some things we'll get into, but I want to, overall, how do you view the White Sox heading into the season, and how do you account for his very open confidence for a team that we have sort of become conditioned to be cynical about?
One of the phrases that he used with Chuck Garfine, and he used it a couple times, and he wasn't hammering it, but he was making sure that this point got home, and he used the phrase, health luck. And they, you know, said in, like I said, just kind of in a parenthetical way, we haven't had much of that. And it sounded like, and Rick never said, oh yeah, we're definitely going to be healthy this year. But I truly think that's one of the, I mean, there's a lot of things that come out of it, but that was one of the big things that Rick Hahn is really depending and thinking about the health luck this year. And when I say that, and he clearly still, like, based on everything that went on in that podcast, has a lot of confidence in the core players. And he was a little defensive about the core players because Chuck kind of took him on, like saying, hey, I was happy when you signed Moncada and Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert to their extensions, but I'm not happy now. And Rick's like, yo, I'm still really happy about this. So to me, that's one of the big takeaways. Rick still loves this core, and sounds like he thinks that if this team stays healthy, that they're the best team in the division.
That's what I liked about the back and forth, is that it was honest and open, because there's no way you could objectively look at what's happened with those extensions and feel as good as Rick Hahn sounded about it. But he still does, because I think he has to. And also, I think, because he sees things on a regular basis that maybe we don't. But still, when you look at the types of years the White Sox have had, and the types of off seasons in the past that they have had since going back to, you know, 05, but certainly since Rick Hahn took the job in 2012, I would not have expected him to identify this spring training as the one that he was most optimistic about. And yet, this is what he had to say about his state of mind heading into this opening day, and never being as happy as he feels right now.
I know you're always excited about a new season. Are you even more excited about the start of this season because of what happened last season?
You know, it is funny, Chuck, because I was thinking of that exact sort of question a few days ago as I was scheduling when I'm going to talk to everybody come opening day and sort of do our opening remarks on the season. And you're right. I think every year I've been asked that question on opening day, I've been excited. I've expressed excitement. I think probably all 30 GMs, regardless of their prospects for this coming season, are going to express similar excitement opening day. But there is something different about this year. I will say that throughout this entire camp, the excitement, anticipation, eagerness for what lies ahead is at a level we haven't had around here in a while. Certainly, our expectations have been high for the last several years, and they remain high at this time. But in terms of what we reasonably think we're going to get this season, I don't remember being more excited than I am right now.
What?
That's interesting. And also because in the context that this spring started as badly as it could have started for the White Sox in terms of the outside attention, paid something nobody wanted to talk about and couldn't. And the Mike Clevenger controversy seems like it was a very long time ago now.
It does.
When you hear him sounding as refreshed, energetic, and optimistic about the season that starts on Thursday.
I can't figure out why he would say that. This is one of the most forward that he's looked for a season. And I'm thinking about it. Is this all because Tony La Russa? Is this ding dong, the witch is dead, and that's why Rickon feels so good?
He's practically giddy.
And nothing is going to get in his way of the high that he has, that he doesn't have to deal with Tony La Russa like he did for the last.
Well, I'll take you back to October and the day they introduced Pedro Grifol. Rickon at that news conference. I remember talking to him after it, and he wanted to keep talking. And he kept talking to other people who were in line to keep talking to him. And I think he would talk to you all day and all winter and all spring and hopefully all season about what he likes about Pedro Grifol. Because you know what? He is not Tony La Russa, and that may be oversimplifying
it. No, let's oversimplify. Is that what it is? Because really, adding Andrew Benintendi? Is that what we're talking about here for your Oscar Colas is looking good? I don't like, what is the area of other than health, luck? It's got to be Grifol just having somebody he has control over.
I kidded Bruce on Saturday when we made our predictions for manager of the year. I said, if the White Sox win the division, I'm going to vote for Tony La Russa because he will be significant by his absence.
Yeah, that's true.
And they have moved on, and they seem so happy, so relieved to have moved on from a guy in the dugout who was there because of reputation, certainly not results, and it wasn't because of the decisions he was making now. It was because of what he did then, and now they can feel good about everything because you're right. The extraction of Tony La Russa from the organization has put Rickon in an unusually good mood.
I don't know. I'm trying to think about it. Like, just going around the – okay, if Yasmani Grandal is healthy, that is a coup for the White Sox. Because when he's healthy, I mean, he had so many big hits when he was healthy and was just such a dangerous presence, and that has been lacking the last couple of years. Maybe Vaughn being the everyday first baseman, maybe you finally get the best out of that guy because he's comfortable defensively. But look, I'm just grabbing at straws here right now,
right,
trying to think about what it is – that Rickon sees beyond ding dong, the witch is dead on this roster, why he would be this optimistic about a team that was just horribly frustrating to watch last year.
Speaking of addition by subtraction, Lurie Garcia, according to the Sun-Times, is not going to be on the opening day roster. That's a big development. And now this podcast was taped before that news became public, which it did thanks to Darryl Von Skowen on Sunday. But I think the question becomes, boy, that's a surprise, number one, because Lurie Garcia has been here since the go-go White Sox, it seems. And two, they still have 2 years and over $10 million committed to Lurie Garcia, who signed a three-year $16.5 million extension a year ago. So obviously, maybe expecting that Lurie Garcia might not be part of the process or part of the season, Chuck asked Rick about, hey, what about the money? What about Jerry Reinsdorf and all this?
You've got Lurie Garcia. He's got this contract. How much does money weigh into someone's contract, weigh into your decision?
It. People won't believe this just because, you know, tend to be cynical by nature, but it doesn't. It doesn't. That's sunk cost, let's say. Ultimately, it's about taking the best 26. And one thing to consider is, what is the effect on your depth of taking these 26? What's the effect on your depth if you go with this group? In other words, do players X and Y walk out the door because you have to release them to make room for somebody else, or because they have, you know, they have certain status that enables them to have out clauses and walk out the door? So you do try to look at not just what's the most competitive roster on March 30th, but also how are we getting through the next several months before we potentially add from outside based on these decisions. But look, we've been to my opinion, to Jerry's strong credit, deserves a great deal of credit, and to my blame, we've eaten contracts before around here. And in the end, the competitiveness of Jerry is going to trump whatever some cost is involved in, you know, when we go to him on a roster decision that potentially involves eating money.
See, now that stands out to me, Mark. The competitiveness of Jerry Reinsdorf trumps sunk costs. I don't know that I always believe that. I don't know that if it's true in every case, but certainly in the latest example that he's citing, you can back it up. Lurie Garcia is still owed $10 million now to go away if he doesn't rejoin the White Sox. If he joins another team, maybe there's an offset language. We don't know, but they are making a determination to move on from a guy who you wondered why he was here in the first place.
Well, and Lurie Garcia has been with the Sox 7 years? Eight, I mean, seriously, like seven. Anyway, in theory, every year when the Sox have decided to again sign Lurie Garcia, it's a good idea. The problem is, like, just Lurie as a player, they end up overusing him, and then he gets exposed. And then he makes critical errors in games, and he just... Like, it sounds weird, but I think Lurie Garcia has, to some extent, been misused by the White Sox because he's been used too much.
Well, I think that when you look at how long he's been here, Mark, though, there's been a lot of different iterations of Lurie Garcia. And I don't want to diminish the fact that he has been a valuable member of this organization. Going back to when he was traded to the White Sox from the Rangers, August 11th, 2013.
Okay, so that's...
Almost a decade.
So, man, what did I say, 7 to 9?
So it's a decade, and he was traded to the Sox to complete an earlier deal within the whole Alex Rios trade, but that goes back a decade that he has been part of this organization, a pretty dependable part of it, which is interesting now that they move on. But we're talking about addition by subtraction. We're talking about changes in the White Sox they feel good about. Let's go back to the managerial search. And this is the last cut I want to hear from Rick Hahn because it's an interesting one. We made a big deal, especially on this show, because he's our baseball expert and he's a friend. He's a friend to a lot of people at this station, a lot of people in Chicago. Ozzie Guillen is everybody's friend, except for maybe Cubs fans. But you look at his candidacy to be the next manager, and we pushed and pushed and pushed the idea of Ozzie Guillen. Rick Hahn, I don't recall him being... at least even addressing this as openly as he did with Chuck, but he talked about interviewing Ozzy in that process.
So this offseason, you almost hired my TV partner away, Ozzy Guillen. I mean, he was in the room with you guys. I mean, this was not just, we're just going to talk to Ozzy. He was, he was a finalist for the job. So, well, what was he? How close was he to getting this job?
I think it's fair to talk about any of the guys who we ultimately didn't choose. I don't think, and we interviewed 8 people initially, obviously including Ozzy, no secret about that. There's actually 2 of the 8 whose names have never become public, and maybe it's because I'm sensitive. I grew up in a time where a guy gets, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 interviews, then all of a sudden hasn't converted on a job. All of a sudden people start worrying, well, what's wrong with this guy? You see in the NFL right now, I'm not going to name names, but there's guys who are frequent coordinators who, for whatever, have been coordinators for whatever reason, get a bunch of interviews and don't get the big job, and people start presuming there's something wrong. So as a general approach, I try not to really talk too much about, you know, who else was part of a process as opposed to just talking about the end result. But, you know, look, Ozzy was obviously out there about being a candidate. As I shared with him at one point during this, you know, no matter what happens in terms of this managerial hire, Ozzy Guillen will continue to be the most accomplished, greatest White Sox manager of my lifetime, and certainly of this era of White Sox baseball. And he has set the standard for, you know, now what Pedro, you know, fingers crossed, is going to be able to surpass. But he's got his work cut out for him to achieve more than what Ozzie did for this franchise.
Kind words and respect from Rick Hahn about Ozzie Guillen, who I thought they should have hired at the time. I like everything I've seen about Pedro Grifol, but we pushed Ozzie, and I look back. And so that was Rick Hahn kind of talking about the Ozzie experience without really talking about the Ozzie experience, right? You didn't get a ton of detail there about how close he actually came and whether or not that was a PR move by bringing him into the mix because of the public pressure or not.
I don't think Ozzie ever had a chance. I think it's the latter. I think it was a PR move. I think it was respect to Ozzie Guillen, a constant presence with their team, a guy that they know what he's saying on TV. I think that this was just a nod to him. I think it satiates a certain percentage of the fan base. Apparently satiated David Haw, because you were happy to hear that he got an interview and got...
satiated.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think you can only be satiated if you're hungry, though. I might be using that word. You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. But people know what I'm saying.
I wanted them to talk to Ozzie. At the time, it made sense. And I think it still...
Dude, here's the problem.
What?
When a manager gets fired.
Dude? What's the problem, dude? Tell me where I'm wrong.
Instead of saying clearly or so, I cleaned the palate with a dude. Dude, here's the thing, okay? Just forget everything else up until now. Dude, here's the thing. Of course, when a manager gets fired, it means things have gone bad, and most things, there's not usually a pretty ending. But the ending to Ozzie Guillen, which was on Rick Hahn's watch, too, and he took some side swipes as well during that era, it was awful.
Oh, I remember.
It was awful.
I was there.
Rick Hahn's friend, Kenny Williams, was just blasted and belittled and crushed, and the whole thing was embarrassing. Do you think Hahn forgot that? Hmm. No way. Okay. I don't think Ozzie ever had a chance. And God bless Ozzie. He is one of the most entertaining dudes. Great visitor to your show.
Every Wednesday.
I do think that, unfortunately, and it would be a blast to see Ozzie doing it, I don't think Ozzie ever had a chance.
Score listener lines powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Let's start the conversation with Kevin in Palatine. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, guys. It's so great that Rick Hahn is comfortable. I think what shouldn't make him comfortable, though, is the second best pitcher on the White Sox last year now pitches for the Marlins, and they didn't replace him. Well, they replaced him with a really, really below average Mike Clevinger. I don't care if they say he's healthy. He was horrible the last 2 years. Kopech has never stayed healthy. Giolito was bad last year, so you can't believe he's going to be good till he's good again. And Lance Lynn is a year older, and he was awful last year. So I know we're all excited, and David, you know how much I love listening to this show, but when Bruce said that Saturday, you should have told him about Yoan Moncada. Did Shohei Ohtani retire? And Aaron Judge? And all these other guys? Another guy who's hurt. Guys, so what day is it going to be when Michael Kopech is hurt, and then everyone stands around with their jaws agape saying, oh, I can't believe he's hurt. He's been in baseball, as Bernstein points out, 11 years. He has never stayed healthy. So hoping for health is not an off-season plan. And I know we already have Oscar Colas as Roberto Clemente, and everyone on the team is going to go to the All-Star game. Guys, the reason everyone, including Vegas, is picking 80 wins is because that's what this team is. And I know you're going to have Chuck on at 8:30, and Chuck's going to have his seashells and balloons and his party animals and his White Sox pom-poms. But, guys, this is a mediocre team, and this pitching staff is so overrated. And the best pitcher on the team besides Cease, unfortunately, because he's a great guy, has cancer. And you guys just assume he's going to come back.
Hendricks?
Give me a break. Let's wake up.
Thanks a lot,
Kevin. Did you
just
say Cease has cancer?
No, he's basically – no. Liam Hendricks.
Yeah.
He's referring to. Cease, okay. Cease is going to be fine. Kevin makes some good points from the – if you again, it's glass half empty, glass half full. Kevin's glass is cracked.
Yeah, well, so, I tend to agree with Kevin, especially in the stuff he said about the pitching staff is spot on. I mean, I'm very comfortable with Dylan Cease. I'll leave him out of that. But he's right about Lynn's older. How old's Lynn now? Like, all of a sudden, Lynn's like 35?
Well,
36?
The Lance Lynn issue is something that I expressed concern about him pitching in the World Baseball Classic, because I think that you want to conserve every inning that he has to offer in a high-leverage situation. You want that to be, you know, in the name of winning for the White Sox. But He's a guy that looked pretty decent during the World Baseball Classic. He's not getting any younger. There's no question that the skepticism surrounding the White Sox pitching rotation is valid. But it depends on how you want to view it. If you want to view it, these guys at their best, even if they are above average, as they could be, as they're paid to be, this is could be a potentially very good rotation that carries this team.
Yeah, I mean,
you're shaking your head, and I understand because the injuries are real.
Well, and what's also real is Giolito has not been very good for the last few years. I mean, like in terms of any kind of real dominance. Last year was a train wreck for him.
Bullpen by committee. Reynaldo Lopez could take over, but he could maybe not be a great option at closer. I think he's the most realistic one down there. Aaron Bummer pitched over the weekend. Yep. That's a good sign.
I like Bummer. Graveman's going to get his shots probably.
And, you know, Kevin wanted me to shoot down Bruce. I laughed. I scoffed. What else do you want me to do to Bruce?
We need a laugh and a scoff. We need a little bit more than that. Wait.
I picked Julio Rodriguez. That was my MVP candidate.
Okay, let's go through a couple. Did he pick David Ross and Pedro Grifol for managers of the year, too?
I think he did.
Oh, man. Bruce is, like, kind this
Leaning
year.
Leaning in.
Yeah.
It's a local show, Grody.
No, hey.
Come on, dude.
I hope he's right. You like the dude stuff. That really stopped you, didn't it?
It did.
Dude.
I love it. Dude. I love it. It's informal. It's you. It's Mark Grody.
Right.
Who you are.
Right.
You're like, you got a lot of Jerome Tang in you. You just are who you are.
Right. I'm inspired. You know what? I'm about to go into that producer studio here in a second and tell these guys, Brandon Fryer and Alex Kuhn, that they are the two hardest working guys that I've ever been around. Like, this, that,
they
that,
are.
Yeah.
Just
absolutely.
Make sure you make it back here for the next segment because we're going to talk to Mike DeCourcy.
Sick.
And he was covering this weekend's Elite Eight round, the Sweet 16. He will have everything about the Final Four you need to know. It's Mully and Haw, Grody in for Mully, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mike DeCourcy talking college hoops with Mully and Haw. Sporting News college hoops columnist. Big Ten Network studio analyst. He's a Liverpool supporter, but we let him on anyways. Mike DeCourcy with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Welcome back. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mark Grody in for Mully today. Time now to go out to our guest hotline. Presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino, home of the world's largest sportsbook. That's where we find our guy Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News and the Big Ten Network. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great, David. How are you?
We're doing well. Boy, what a weekend it was. What a Final Four this is. Three new participants in the Final Four. Mike, just big picture-wise, how would you describe this field? And whether it's, you know, good for college basketball or some people are going to miss the familiar names and faces and brand names that we're used to seeing.
Well, I can't say it's bad for college basketball, but it does, you know, lead one to wonder how the public will react to this Final Four. There are schools that aren't traditionally well supported. Florida Atlantic, interestingly, their gym, their arena, only holds like 2,400 people. Miami traditionally has not been an extremely well-supported program over the years. San Diego State has been. They have a terrific following in their market. And I've been encouraging the Pac-12 to invite them as a member for a long time, since right around the time that USC and UCLA announced that they were going to the Big Ten. It's not a direct replacement, but it's a pretty solid replacement for what you're losing. San Diego State has. I was there for a game a while back, and it was an impressive home atmosphere. So they don't have as significant a following nationally because their games are on in the Central and Eastern time zones relatively late. A lot of their games are midnight or close to it in the Eastern time zone. So people don't know the team as well and don't know the school as well, but they've been pretty well followed for a while.
Mike, couple of really entertaining games again yesterday, and the one that I'm zeroed in on is Miami beating Texas 88-81. I practically walked away from that game because it just seemed like Texas had it under control. Did Texas just choke in that game?
No, I think, first of all, Texas missed badly its starting center, Dylan Dessous. They don't have the same level of offensive options without him as they did with him. He brought a lot of balance to their offense. I think that was the number one thing that happened. Injuries played a big role in the identity of this Final Four, and that was the most recent one to have an impact. Texas losing Dessous after two really terrific games in the first couple of rounds, and then he hurt himself in advance of the Sweet 16 and essentially wasn't able to play that game. They played very well against Xavier, but weren't able to continue sustaining what they built in the first 30 minutes of this game. I did not like taking out the younger players for Texas. I thought that they did a really good job and made Miami uncomfortable when they went with their veterans totally down the stretch. The veterans didn't deliver in the way that would have been necessary to make that the right choice.
Mike, you were in Louisville. You were at the San Diego State Creighton game. You wrote a really compelling column about the foul call at the end. I'll let you explain what you said and why you called it the worst bad foul call is that you've seen decide a game like that since 1995.
Yeah, it's been almost 30 years since I saw that at Memphis and Arkansas in Kansas City in the Sweet 16. You call it a rough call on what wasn't rough contact. And in this case, I thought that the fact that Ryan Nemhard put his hand on Darian Trammell's hip, I just didn't think that was enough to warrant a foul in a game that was called. It was called so physically. I mean, there were almost no fouls committed in the game, or I shouldn't say no fouls committed, but almost no fouls called in the game from either side. And San Diego State plays a very physical brand of basketball. They're really good at not using their hands. And that makes a difference. And that's ultimately what got Nemhard was that he used his hands. And I thought that it was in that situation, based on what we had seen the prior 39 minutes and 55 seconds, that it was really brutal to call that. I'm not a believer that you change the rules at the end and let the players decide the game. That's not what I'm saying. I wanted to make it really clear. That's not my position. I believe a foul in the first minute is a foul in the 40th minute. But this play was not a foul in the first minute, second minute, third minute, or the 40th, but they called it one.
Yeah, everybody, you know, in any sport, you're just looking for consistency throughout the game, and you can handle just about anything if there is a consistency. But first Final Four for San Diego State, and then we have to get to mighty Florida Atlantic, Mike. How do you explain what this team has done as a number 9 seed and taking down Kansas State 79-76 on Saturday?
You know, one of the things that I've talked about for years, and I even wrote a column, this was probably a dozen years ago, maybe 15 years ago, I came up with what I call the 801 Club. And what that is teams that win more than 80% of their games entering the tournament. Those teams, you know what they do when they get in the tournament most of the time? They win, because that's all they do. They win in the regular season, they win in their conference tournament, and then they win in the NCAA because they built winning squads, winning teams. They're used to winning no matter what they face relative to the opposition. And the committee has never fully embraced that concept. They they look at it as, well, your league isn't that great, so the fact that you're beating those teams isn't that great. And I reject that notion. I think that these teams, like Florida Atlantic, they're very rare. We don't see many of them. But when we do, when you win at that level, it's not that big a surprise that you're going to win in the NCAA tournament. And one of the things that when I was doing this research years ago, one of the things that was kind of a constant was that if you win at that level, it usually takes someone else who wins at that level to take you out. Somebody else that's winning 80% of their games may be in a stronger league than Conference USA. And so that's, to me, that's the best explanation of why Florida Atlantic won four more games. They got lucky, but they also continued to fight. In the Memphis game, they should have lost. Memphis had the ball in their All-American point guard's hands, Kendrick Davis, inside the final 10 seconds with a lead. And Kendrick decided that the prudent thing to do, rather than keep the ball in the hands of the All-American player, was pass it, and he turned it over. And then even after stealing it back, his teammate Jaden Hardaway got the ball in a scramble, and his teammates called timeout, but the refs didn't grant the timeout, as they should have. So everybody that gets this far needs a little bit of luck, except maybe UConn, which seems to have made its own.
Mike, before we let you go, I'm really curious about your opinion about what happened to Alabama. Now, San Diego State beats them on Friday, but I wonder, big picture, if you take a step back and you look at the way they handled this crisis. Did crisis management, whether it was failing to suspend any of the players involved in the tragedy, whether it was what Nate Oates said publicly, which created even as big of an uproar, brought more attention to it. Did crisis management ultimately contribute to Alabama's early exit?
I don't think it did. I think it contributed to the response to it, which was widely, boy, am I glad they're gone. I mean, I think they made a lot of enemies or turned people against their program or the athletic department or university. Because remember, it's not just the basketball coach that said that there would be no punishment. It was the athletic department above him and the university above them, and all of them agreed not to punish either of the two players who were present at that incident. The entire group of people decided that. So they damaged their own brand and their own university's integrity by making these choices. But I don't think it made a difference on the floor. They played really well on the night after that hearing. They played really well at South Carolina. At least the team didn't, but Brandon Miller did. And then they won a bunch of games. They won the SEC tournament. I was there at the game on Friday night, and I didn't think that they were bothered by that. The crowd actually, I thought that the crowd might be hostile, but it wasn't really a neutral crowd. The largest portion of fans were from Alabama, so they supported the Tide. So I just think that they played poorly against a team that defended them well, and they didn't really react with great ferocity to that kind of challenge. I think they the only other time they played a team like that this year was Tennessee, and Tennessee beat them just as badly. And so I think it's just a style of basketball they didn't want to play, and so it just comes to that, down to that for the performance, but the reaction. Alabama has its own self to thank.
Mike, thanks so much for your time. Look forward to talking to you later this week about the matchups. And I would encourage everybody to go to sportingnews.com and read your column on what happened in Louisville, because it's a good one.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Mark. We'll talk to you this week.
Thanks, man.
Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News and the Big Ten Network. Very interesting insight, sharp opinions. His take on the foul against San Diego State, the Creighton kid who committed the foul that led to that San Diego State victory. 1.2 seconds left, Mark Grody. When we come back, I want to get your opinion, and maybe people want to weigh in as well. 312-644-6767. Is there an understanding? Should there be a time when refs don't make a call because, you know, let the players decide? Mm-hmm. Or if you're going to call it in the first half, shouldn't you call it down the stretch? What is your philosophy there? What did you think when you saw the whistle blown? And did you think that, okay, you know, this was the same call that you would have made in the first half, so it should be the call that you make down the stretch? Mully is out today. Mark Grody is in. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
They've determined it's over. For the first time in school history, San Diego State is going to the Final Four. A heartbreaking loss for Creighton. And it's Aztec madness. 57-56.
Welcome back. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mark Grody in for Mully. That was the call on Sunday from the Creighton-San Diego State game. Came down to Creighton guard Ryan Nembhard with 1.2 seconds left, fouling Darian Trammell for San Diego State, sending him to the free throw line of a tie game. Trammell misses the first one, and I thought it looked a little heavy. You know when guys are fluid at the free throw line?
Yeah.
Mark Grody?
You miss that first one in a spot like that, it feels like death.
I thought he was going to miss another one.
Of course.
I thought it was like, because he didn't have a fluid release. He's kind of stopped, shot. I thought the second one was going to miss, but he didn't, and they win. And you heard Mike DeCourcy. He called it the worst bad call that he's seen with the stakes this high since 1995. And I think a lot of people on my timeline looked at it and said, terrible call. I think social media is where people go to share these complaints and air their grievances. So I get that. I looked at it as if you're going to call that in the first quarter, you should call it on the final possession.
Mm-hmm.
I also go back to, look, the Super Bowl, we're in a similar situation. Remember that? With Bradberry and everything that happened with the Eagles and the Chiefs. Where do you stand on what's appropriate with the whistle, with the call? Does it matter what the stakes are when you're either throwing a flag or calling a foul?
I said it after the Super Bowl, too, and I was just talking about consistency. Yes, we all like consistency. That's ideal. But just because you screwed up in the beginning of the game, and you know Mike DeCourcy was talking about it, how those fouls weren't called. To me, that's screwing up. Just because you screwed up in the beginning of the game, doesn't mean you have to screw up at the end of the game.
Two wrongs don't make a right.
And not call those
fouls.
That's
what Mama always said.
That's right.
That's Mama Grody always
that's
said.
That's right. Gene says that.
Gene
yes.
says that
to this day. Exactly.
How's Gene doing?
Gene is doing very well. She's enjoying her bridge groups. A lot of work with the church, so everything is good with
Gene
Grody.
She's having a good Lent
season. Yep. She tells me every Friday not to eat meat, and it just screws up my plans.
But I agree with you. If you have made a mistake earlier, that doesn't justify one later.
It doesn't, and that's ultimately where I stand. I see the frustration. Like, from Creighton's standpoint, oh, my God, really? You're going to call the foul where we got to slow it down to even see that there was a foul. There was a foul, so there's only so angry you can get. But situationally, moment-wise, I understand the anger.
I'm just going to be honest, though. When I was watching it, I did wonder, the left hand, I think it was, when he made contact, and that does
left
alter
hip.
The shot.
Yeah.
Or the hip. Yeah,
that's a great point, Hall.
It does
that's
alter
a great
the
point.
Shot. And I think any time that you make body contact in a way that alters the shot, it can justify having a foul call.
Yeah, and isn't it more important at the end of a game to really button up if you're a referee? And the concept of just let the guys play. No, I think that, look, players tighten up. Players get more exact with what they're doing on the court in the final 5 minutes of the game, and so do referees probably.
630 says, last plays the game, their last minute should be decided on the field. I said that in the Super Bowl and took a beating. Say the same thing here. Interesting, people were for the Super Bowl call, but against this one. I don't know if that's true about the consistency in the change of opinion, but I do respect where he's coming from. 773. Ever see a call like that at the end of a hockey game? Well, I think the implication is, and I would tend to agree with it, generally speaking, hockey guys are allowed to play out and let things go more at the end of a shift in the last minute of a game that might be a one-goal differential or whatever the case would be. That's an interesting comment.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And look, I mean, they got the call right. And look, if this was a team that we were covering – course we'd be going crazy. So I do understand it from Creighton's viewpoint. At the end of the day, this is one of those times where it just sucks. It sucks that the game ended on a free throw in the last second of the game. That sucks, but it wasn't an injustice.
Score listener line powered by BetQL. Let's check out what Paul in Valparaiso has to say about the officiating. Good morning, Paul. Welcome to the Mullin Haw Show.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, of course he said it. I mean, Mark, I totally disagree. It is about consistency. If it was a home plate umpire that kept calling a ball 4 inches outside for both teams, we would say, hey, the batters can't keep taking strike three. You got to adjust to what the umpire is doing. It's the same thing. I believe that this whole tournament, San Diego State has got the reputation of being this great defensive team. And yes, they are a great defensive team. Of course, he said it. They don't use their hands a lot, but they foul a lot. And the refs have kind of let it go. And that's really what's helped them to get to where they've gotten. So you can't call a little hand on the hip. And like you said, didn't really affect the shot a lot with 0 seconds. I mean, to put a free throw shooter at the line with the game to go to the Final Four, when you let San Diego State throw guys around the whole game. Nembhard, the Creighton's one of their best players, hurt his arm on a blatant hack when he was 94 feet from the basket right in front of a ref that they didn't call, and he's out part of the second half because he gets hit. San Diego State used their hands. They fouled the hole, but because they had the reputation, refs go along with it. You just can't make that call. If you ref the game the way that you ref the game the whole time for San Diego State to not call all those physical contact, you can't call that cheap foul at the end.
Paul, thanks for your input. Great, strong opinions. Matt is in Milwaukee. Matt, welcome to Mullin Haw.
Thanks. I was just saying, I believe in the consistency idea. If you give, it's the old, give them an inch, they'll take a mile. If you start letting everything go just because it's the end of the game, if I'm the other coach and playing defense, no one's going to get a decent shot off because I will say do whatever you got to do because they're not going to call it. You take a look at the Major League Baseball rules changes when they called the strike three to end the game because of the new rules with the amount of time you have to get into the thing. This could happen at the – this could be a World Series. That could have been a World Series game. Should the umpire ignore the rules just because it's no longer convenient?
Right. And I appreciate the call. But I have no problem with a referee in the final 30 seconds of the game gets everything right. Gets everything right. And the ref did get it right. And as you said, Haw, it probably did distract the shot.
It did.
Just a little bit.
It did.
Yes.
You don't have to be an expert shooter. You don't have to be a Division I basketball player taking a shot to go to the Final Four or not to understand that you have a much better chance of making a shot when you're not impaired than when you are. He was impaired. There was his hip was nudged.
Hey.
And even the littlest nudge, Grody, I mean, you can nudge somebody to miss.
Yeah, and guess what?
Happens all the time.
And guess what? Just because they were not calling it early in the game, that does not mean that they should keep on being wrong towards the end of the game. And it doesn't mean that you're allowed to foul just because they're calling it loose.
847 says a foul's a foul. The hand on the hip altered the shot. Thank you
for
that common sense approach. Also, credit to Greg McDermott. He didn't make this an issue. I think he was pretty gracious, unless I missed something, about saying that wasn't the one thing. Every coach says this, right? But he's right. It wasn't one call that led them to lose the game. I think they were 0 for 11 from three-point land for one point. They missed 11 straight. So anyway, it's a very interesting topic. If you have comments, feel free, 312-644-6767. But we're going to shift gears a little bit. Opening day, I don't know if you heard, Mark Grody.
I heard.
It's Thursday.
Yes.
And we're going to talk baseball. We talked about something over the weekend on Inside the Clubhouse. I want to revisit. You were listening. You heard it. We'll talk about that next. Mully is out. Grody is in. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.